You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
All right, it's September 12th. It's the day after 9/11, and it's unreal from Paris, France. And Hello. How are you today?
I'm fine. It's a day after.
Day after. I didn't get on that garbage media broadcast. He tried to connect with me for about an hour, couldn't get it going, and then the time I was watching his live feed on YouTube with the guy with a purple wig and another woman with crazy hair, and after a while, I had to go to bed anyway, but I figured this might not have been a great fit for me, and they weren't really talking about 9/11 at all during the time I watched it. I did download the show, and I was going to watch it, listen to it today.
So that was what happened to me. Yeah, I have not heard about garbage media too much, I haven't got through any of their material, but have you listened to some of their productions before, or what do they produce?
Well, no, I haven't really listened to garbage media, but Mark, his pseudonym is Mark from Garbage Media, has been on audio chat sometimes, and I don't know exactly what they do and how they make a living doing what they're doing, because couldn't really get a good theme from their show that I watched for about half an hour last night while everyone else was in the audio chat at fakeologist.com. Can't really tell you.
So they're mostly based on YouTube then? They don't actually have a website with the podcasts, really?
Yeah. Well, it looks like it's a little hangout type setup. It looks like they have a real studio in Toronto. People are sitting down in front of a microphone, and I don't understand why the host wears purple hair and sunglasses, and I don't really understand the whole costume setup and what they're trying to accomplish.
It may be interesting to, as you say, to have them in the audio chat and ask them these questions.
Yeah. Well, they're real fakeologists, otherwise them on their garbage media channel and gave their name themselves, I'm assuming. So obviously their channel has something to do with garbage.
Yeah, I would guess that garbage media just means like they are criticizing the media. But to what extent, that would be the crucial point for us, at least, to know how well they understand what the media is producing.
Yeah, well, or are they putting out garbage? I don't know.
Maybe they are that part of the media.
Yeah, I don't know. I just finished listening to the part of the audio chat from yesterday that I wasn't on. And it mostly Delcroix with Kay Hamad. And that was interesting discussion. A lot of flat earth talk. Kay Hamad is very much against the flat earth. And though Kay hasn't really addressed anything concrete that like Eric Dubé have put forward. And again, I'll just say I will look across Lake Ontario and I'm told it's 33 miles. And I can see my naked eye almost all of the CN Tower. I'm sure if I had a zoom lens, I could probably see the building sitting at the bottom of the CN Tower, which is the male part of the whole equation called the Sky Dome.
But can you see the nuclear submarines?
No, I can't. I know we bought them off Britain, but I don't know where they are. No, we bought the diesel ones off Britain. I don't even know if we used them.
Yeah, so just on the debate on the flat earth, I think it's a little bit of a confusion just to, I guess, to jump to conclusions, to say the earth is this and that shape is very difficult, I think. But what is very reasonable is to question the everything we have been taught about the earth and reinvestigate it and, as you say, observations we can make ourselves, they are very important, and those must be explained as well. It doesn't say that the Earth is necessarily entirely flat or whatever, but it does ask some serious questions about the model we are supposed to accept without questioning it. And I think that's where I think Kamad is a bit too insistent on putting all the questioning of the Earth to be flat Earth talk. I don't think it is. I think many people that question the official state stance is a reasonable questioning, and it's also important.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. She's virulent about it. She's very dogmatic about it. And again, if give me using their measurements that they give us about the ball Earth, their mass, why do I not see a curve? Why can I see most of the building 33 miles away? Why is that? I need an explanation. Is the ball 10 times bigger or 100 times bigger? Is it a ball at all? This is the most basic thing I can argue with. Is it because my eye is a sphere? I don't buy into the fraction. I don't buy to the mirage or the inverse mirage. None of that makes any logical sense to me. I'm positive I don't see a mirage. What is the explanation?
Well, Occam's razor would tend to lean towards something that was flattish, at least, not completely round, as they tell us. And when we see the pictures they give us that are photoshopped, it lends to that belief that we are not on something completely geometrically round at all. So what is the nature of the actual planet? Well, it would be great to go into space and actually take a shot of Earth, but if that's not possible, we must try to do our best from the ground. And that's what I thought would be good for, like, we need to separate maybe the sciences that can, relate to what we can observe and measure on Earth to the model of the galaxy. I don't think those two are necessarily have to be sewn together. There are two problems that relate on each other, but I think we could start with looking at what we can touch here on Earth to make the conclusions on the actual shape we can measure and see here.
Yeah.
Because the sun and the moon actually works? I mean, that's not necessarily what gives the shape to the Earth. The Earth has its shape independently of how the sun is moving.
Simon said yesterday that he's going to something to the table, intimated that the Earth was moving at 1 mile per hour. Let's see what Simon has to tell us in the coming period when he says he's going to reveal his vision of what we're on and where we are in the whole grand scheme of.
I really think that it will contribute to the debate as a whole to question things even more. So that would only support the efforts that are made to ask these questions. Because from what I understand, he does not believe that the sun that we spin around the sun either. So that means there are some serious problems with the model we are presented.
Yes. He's a heliocentric skeptic, but I don't know if he's a ball Earth skeptic.
Yes, but even so, it just means like the model we have and that we have lived with is completely false. If it's not spinning, I mean, everything changes, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
So I think Hoy made some good points on how we have to keep these questions open too, and to be able to look forwards and say that yeah, there is going to be new research that's coming that might change the way we view the model we and the construct we live in.
Yes, we need to change the model, because the model, that's the other thing that says everything. All the evidence points. She's always on evidence. 98% of the evidence points to ball Earth. But all our skeptics have quite clearly noted that in many cases, the evidence work for the flat Earth or the ball Earth. It works quite well both ways. And the other thing that I kept hearing in the different ball Earth skeptics is that the math can be created to support the initial theory of ball Earth. In other words, they take the premise that the Earth is a sphere, and then they do the math for it. It's the original premise. It doesn't work the other way around, because mathematics is really just another way of explaining things. Morology, it's not the basis. Another form of explanation. That's why it's not proof that something is something. It's just another. Really, it's another language to put things, observation together.
They use a lot of logical fallacies to construct their theory. So many of those fallacies has been taken apart. And if you can just take apart the spinning side of things, I think we are in a completely new situation where everything is up for question. I think that's really where we are. We are not yet on a flat, infinite plane or under a dome yet. We need to be a little bit more patient, but to still really question the logic we should use to come to any good answers here. And in that regard, I'm looking forward to Simon contributing into the debate and also to look through his findings, because there is a lot of elements to know more about in this debate.
Yes, very much so.
But of course, like every rabbit hole is full of controlled opposition, and that's the case with the flat Earth or ball Earth as well, of course. But that has never, kept us from investigating JFK or 9/11. I mean, just imagine the number of gatekeepers we have had to go through. If you should stop because there are gatekeepers in 9/11 research, you would just stop investigating 9/11 for that matter. I don't think so.
That's true. There's lots of roadblocks, lots of confusion, and which is to do. If you can't convince, you confuse. And,
yes. So what I said early on when I had a chance to come on the round table with Mark Sargent is like, I feel Mark Sargent is using fallacious arguments all the time, and I don't really think he's genuine. He's a nice guy, but he's not genuine in my view. And there is a lot of there is going to be a lot of control opposition around this subject. It's too important and too wide ranging for not to be touched by this phenomenon of control opposition.
When he makes fun, the fact that he is working for the NSA or other intelligence agency, you think that's part of the exception?
Well, I'm not that interested in knowing exactly who he works for or what his mission is. If he's religious and he's under a kind of a religious spell or whatever, but I just know that his reasoning is not sound, and his personality seems very constructed with his name and his cowboy hats and his looks. And when I hear his show, it's like I'm not going to spend that much time going down his way. But we are in a landscape where there is going to be loads of control opposition. And some of what control opposition is saying is, of course, true, too. You know, they come with some good arguments. I would listen to them, but I'm not... I do feel like, and his the latest girl that had her radio show too, the redhead girl. I mean, I would just not be that interested in following those people. But I will be more interested in hearing more from intelligent debates as they have made on the Flat Earth Roundtable or the Ball Earth Roundtable, etc. And it is an interesting topic.
Not listening to Patricia Steer, the redhead. Have you listened to her shows?
Yeah, I just looked a little bit and listened a little bit to it, and it does not please me very much.
Okay, yeah, it's just general conversation more than anything. I don't really call an impression one way or the other.
That's what I would dislike with many of the researchers, even like journalism and these people that they try to be experts in any field, and it's difficult. I think the research on the ball earth is interesting, but many of their other theories are not that interesting and not well founded actually. So
yeah, I haven't watched Jaronism's stuff on his other on his non research, but I do enjoy his NASA research, and I thought his ISS view parties or ISS live, so-called live view stream video viewing parties, I thought they were very, very, very good.
Oh, me too, very and good. I enjoy that, but I don't know if you listen to his latest show when he goes into, to you know, pedophilia and those kind of subjects. And I just feel like he's using bad logic when it comes to analyzing images presented on the television to tell us whatever about those incidents.
Yes. I haven't listened to that, but I know Surfer talk about it, and he thinks that Jaronism is deliberately steering his followers into la-la land, as is always the accusation.
Well, I wouldn't accuse him of that. I'm more saying that he's touching on a little bit too many subjects, and some of them I don't feel he has a very good expertise on. I don't know about his steering. He sounds pretty down to earth and engaged in what he's doing. So, but it's just the fact that the research is getting too broad and going over into subjects that they actually don't know enough about. It's just like Eric Dubé. He does not know enough about the Second World War or those things to have, or 9/11 for that sake, to have that a strong stance, you know?
Yeah, well, I tend to agree. And I suppose we all have opinions on everything, and some of them are better kept quiet, I suppose, as well. But
or at least
people,
kept open.
Yeah.
Like there could be more open questions in some way. And I'm also doubtful about veganism, you know. So it's like that is a kind of a difficult subject. But it's also, I don't know if it's good to tie that into to the research on the shape of the Earth or whatever.
Oh, I agree. I don't know about it either. I think balance is always the best way to do most things in our lives. That seems to be a good way. But yeah, I have views on everything. Probably do, but I'm not convinced one way or the other on most things. I'm always trying to modify my view on everything.
Yeah, that's the attitude I'm trying to have too, in the sense that I feel like I'm always surprised by the size of the operations that are being led against us. So it's like it's dangerous to stop at the road crossing somehow. So it's difficult to be patient, but I think it's a good ambition.
The only thing I'm positive about is the official story is almost always wrong. That I am positive about. So therefore, we're left alone to try and figure out what's going on, which is very difficult without proper resources.
Yeah, that's probably a point that is interesting in regards to 9/11 too. It's like we have pinned down so much about the what went on that day, but we will not be able to write down the names on the list and know who did what.
Oh, we can't. We can't even know exactly what happened. We can guess pretty clearly. We can make some very, very good guesses based on all the other things we've seen past that we're told are real. For instance, I believe demolitions of buildings do occur for real, and I believe there are companies that specialize in that for real, and not too many either, because it's a very specialized business, and it's not a frequent occurrence. Not every day do you take down a big building.
Yeah, so I just think that what I wanted to say was that as we don't have the names on the list, and that we don't have the company, as you say, that did a demolition, for somebody that is incredible or does not has a hard time knowing what happened that day, we will not be able to convince them in the way they would like, which is normally that the press, like, would give some names, you know, they're going to be put on trial, and he's guilty, you know. So we don't have that to support our review of things.
Of course, we question even trials and court scenes now because we're quite comfortable with the idea that you could simulate that as well, which is more disturbing than about anything, that you don't even get to know which court cases are really, really happening in a lot of ways.
Of course. I was just making the point that a person that has not been into alternative research, he would like to have those answers and see the normal way of events going down to prove what happened and have guilty people judged. But I completely agree. The courts are very much contrived, and I think we can see it only from the OJ example and also from the Breivik example, where I think Klaus Forum made a good case of there being CGI implied in the images and film taken from the what was presented as the trial.
Oh yeah, they can simulate court scenes. I doubt there's any real records. But they could also fake some records too, I'm afraid to say, that's the most thing, that they could insert fake records to a real registry of some sort. So that makes it almost impossible now to sort out if a trial really did occur. But I'm sure they are not able to legally fake every aspect of the paper trail and the evidence.
But who writes the law, Ab?
Yeah, I understand that they create the law, but
why can't they just rewrite it and do what I think they do, actually? So I think when you reflect on it, it's like it's another step on the ladder to come closer to what they really are doing, because that's only like a facade for giving them even more authority to hide behind those laws and those rules.
Right. So you question the whole court system and its reality, its authority rather, its authority. You'd question that.
Yeah, I don't think they, for them, this is something else than their own playbook they are writing as they seem fit and as they do it, as they seem fit. And I don't think, a court is like a theater. I mean, people are dressed up like the Magi in Egypt and having, wigs. And I mean, it's a show.
Yeah,
why should
disturbing.
The right things be so true? I mean, So it's for me, it's more propaganda and tools for them to get the authority from us.
Right. Yeah, that's disturbing. Disturbing. I'm just listening to an audio that Delcroix recommended called "A Plain Truth." The guy calls himself Plain. heard that series?
No, but it's a funny name.
Why he calls himself Plane, Plane, the airplane. But he's interviewing Jay Widener, and they're discussing the Alex Jones, Bill Hicks whole idea. And the other thing talked about just before that, I'm not finished the audio. I logged in here just for fun. But he was talking about how the world is controlled by gangs. I tend to agree with that, and I know you're a professional, I believe. Saying that you can't even build a building without clearing it through the construction gang or other types of gang. Call a group of people a gang, I suppose. And he was also saying that if you want to get successful in life, you got to join some gang, Masons or association, just to get ahead, which I tend to agree is true. You can't really do things on your own alone. It's very difficult. And gang. All aspects of our lives, energy, and that's why if you're a maverick, that inventor that creates that type of energy, well, you got to get it past the gang,
yeah.
And they're gonna stop you because what you're doing is not in their gang's interest. If you have a real technology, it doesn't really matter if it might be better for the world, but if it doesn't help the gang that's controlling it, you're done. It's not gonna happen. I thought that was an interesting perspective the way he's talking about. Also saying that as technology changes and different gangs lose control because whatever they're controlling is no longer relevant or useful, and there's potential for the whistleblowers from those old gangs to come forward and expose, though the gang might not be relevant, And anyway, it was just an interesting perspective on how society is organized that way.
Yeah, I used to really appreciate Jay Voitner. He's a very good speaker, and he presents things in a very funny and entertaining way. And I completely agree with that statement that the world is composed of groups and gangs that have interests and do control things. And I think that's where the Freemasons are so strong, actually. They have their arms into even a small society. There would be a diners club or some lions club or something, some club, where you have that gang sitting there and always having a hand in what's being passed as building permits or you know, future development plans for a city or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, if you don't have any foot into that those groups, you will have a hard time doing much work.
Now, I've never been a gang follower. I've always been a bit of a maverick myself, independent, in the way I've always been through life. Even in every school I've been in, I've just never been in a gang. That's why I'm not really willing to say that fakeologists are a gang per se. I don't really try and gather people under one umbrella necessarily. I just an open air tent more than anything, or people can walk in and walk out freely. But I was also listening to another non-fakeologist podcast, Humble and Fred show. I've referenced it before. That's my local.
Been on your show, Humble.
True. Very good. Yeah. They're local news, local entertainment, so that's why I like to hear it. But they had a police officer on, an ex-cop on, and he was speaking that are similar to what I was just talking about gangs. He said ex-cop mainly because he just didn't like the police culture, the fraternal order. They're another Masonic group. And he just did not like being in that gang. And he had the polywool impressions of what it was to be a cop, and that's why he joined. But once he got in, found out exactly how it worked and how it becomes an us against them mentality in all ways, didn't like that. It didn't fit his illusion of what the cop is or the cop was, and he just didn't want to be part of the gang, because in it they detect, the group detects that you don't want to be part of the gang, shunned. And it's just like a foreign ant that wanders into the wrong colony. You're isolated and you're attacked and killed or run out of the colony. I thought that was his discussion was quite revealing to me as to how just police officers themselves work. Again, it speaks to the gang organization of society. Jay Wiedner was talking about in this audio that I will be posting on fakeologist.com.
Yeah, I think what is very interesting for the people that are in power is to be able to understand well how big groups of people work and also smaller groups. And when we just think as individuals, we do not probably think enough about the fact that a group would not be as free thinking or as free as an individual, and we kind of bind ourselves when we are in a group to reach a consensus that everybody must live under. And the fact that you then actually have always been quite independent probably have made that you have been pushed away for people want to integrate you in such groups too, because they already see that you could not live in that structure, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, the people that rule over us know that groups, large groups, census, they're who rule the world. In other words, they're never really afraid of the individual, because the individual has almost zero power, and they realize that society organizes in gangs and groups. It's always the biggest, most thuggish gang that ends up running the place, and they know the individual is pretty powerless.
Yeah, exactly.
So the individual is not a threat in any way.
Exactly. So they are really advanced in how to manipulate groups, and they have this science worked out, and that's why they are you know, steering kind of the events in the world in a certain way, probably in a more slower fashion than we believe. For them, they are probably thinking, you know, in longer time spans than we could think in, and also measure those effects for longer intervals than we are measuring.
Yeah, that is their expertise. That is their specialty. Yeah, I have no doubt. Group herd management science involves real studies of people and behavior. And, of course, now in this day and age, they have most sophisticated tools possible for gathering intelligence on human behavior and human gathering and human interaction and human group forming. They make it easy on Facebook to form a group, of course, blogs, websites. It's all so easily measured now, and they can really, it's almost everything except getting inside the human mind, which of course is impossible, but measure how the human mind manifests in the digital public world. That is what the intelligence agents do. They're not spying on other countries. They're spying on their own citizens and coordinating together to create new organizations around the world, whether you want to call them corporations or nations or regions or however they choose to organize us.
Exactly, and I think that's how they think. Like they are creating the future United States in 100 years now. You know, they are importing the people, they are creating the politics, they are conducting the industry to directing the industry in certain ways. They are like building the society for a future that they are trying to plan. You know, that is further ahead than we could think.
Yeah. I don't think they have any magical technology either. I've always said that. I don't think there's any focused magic technology that can do magical things. Magical thing imagery, no doubt in my mind about that. And, of course, they demonstrate it every week with a new movie.
Yeah, but, Ab, if they can movies, have every American duck under their desk for 10 years in fright of the atom bomb, isn't that magic? I mean,
it's like magic for sure. It's a magical control over people's minds. That would be called mind control, and that would be called tele-lie vision, which is probably one of their best ever inventions. I'm sure it's far more successful than they ever dreamed of.
Magic is manifesting something from nothing, and that's what they are doing with money, with the nuclear threats and everything, and they actually have us act on it. So it's like it's real. So they have created something real, even if it isn't, because our reactions are real.
Oh, okay. So you're saying, yeah, that is magic. That
exactly is
the definition of magic, yeah.
So that's their power. That's what they are good at, to create something out of nothing in that sense, not in the technical sense that we mostly look at, but they actually have us act according to what they create, be it real or not. We are dancing after their flute somehow. That's their...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true. It's a really good way of looking at it. Really powerful, and that's really what we need to study more than anything. Not every single detail of every single way they do the trick. We need to just keep the eye on the big picture at all times, because it's so easy to get thrown off of it and lose sight of what's actually trying to be accomplished. Yeah, I'd always like to hear more discussion on what do you think the 100-year plan is. The Pope is going to come out with his plan for 2030, which is only 15 years away. It's half a generation or a quarter generation away, and then they're going to make it quite clear what the plan is. They're going to tell us. They're going to tell us what they're going to try and do on a global basis. So it's not really they're just going to make us cry out for it and want it and desire
it. Exactly. They are, putting the tools into place to have us act as they want in this future. So it's like the cards are on the table. It's just like it's hard to understand them while they're handing out their cards. We cannot join all the dots, so to say. But the cards are out there. The movies for the events to come are being done now. So it's not like we don't have any thing to look at. We have, but it's difficult to get the complete picture, as you say. That's very hard.
Well, I think everyone should go look at the cards. Go to type in Agenda 2030, which is the successor of Agenda 21. Go look it up. World's leaders, and it looks like the Pope they put in place is Jesuit-trained Pope. This self-professed and self-aggrandizing Pope is really positioning himself as a world leader. He's almost superseding Congress in a ceremonial way by speaking to what's supposed to be the most powerful arrangement of government on the planet. And I don't think it's just symbolism. People really should take it seriously. I don't think anything bad is going to happen in September any more than the normal fear mongering. But it's just a distraction for their, as they usually do, they legally, I know it's legal system, they legally put their cards on the table for people to examine. That way, when it happens 10 years down and people ask what happened, we say, well, I told you so. You were too busy being afraid of this and that story. Here it is. This is the plan. Here's the 200-point plan that we have pushed all the way down to the local level about how you build your roads, how you build your buildings, how you administer your taxes, how you meter your power, your energy, how you can measure the air and charge people for CO2 or oxygen or whatever fantastic name you want to put on the stuff that goes into our lungs every day. I don't know, has anyone ever questioned the actual composition of air? You know how they tell us it's 78% oxygen and 21% oxygen. How can these are all just theories in the sense that they try and tell us what we can't see.
Yeah, I would guess that analyzing air probably would be somewhat possible. But what's for sure is, like, if they could tax the air we breathe, they would. And I think Agenda 21 and exactly. Those agendas, they are made to have complete control over the whole environment we evolve in. And that, of course, is probably to be better conduct their operations, plain and simply. They will have all the information. For instance, as Agenda 21 moves in for building a house, for instance, now, you also need to show where the trees are put in the garden, and you have to tell them if you cut down a tree.
Yeah, well, in Toronto, you cannot cut a tree down. You have to call in the city. They have to give you a permit. Fines if you do, and there's snitch lines, and
but
crazy.
Just imagine, Ab, this is so crazy. I mean, the tree is not anyone's tree. It's just growing there out of nature, and then we all want to control that natural resource. It's incredible that the government should have anything to do with the grass that grows in your garden, or a plant you have in your window, or a plant you have planted in your own garden. But that's the extreme length they will take to have control of all these elements.
It's just proof that you don't own your own property. Okay, you don't have complete control over your own space, which is more proof you do not own. If you even have your name on a title, you don't own that property. You're really just leasing it from a higher authority, whether you want to call it the Queen or whoever else is behind her. You don't own it. It's not yours.
Exactly.
You're just borrowing it. You're renting it. You're just it's just another form of the feudal system. It's more elaborate and it's more complex, and it appears that you have more authority, but it's not.
But even the authority, they just pretend to own these places, because no person can really own anything, because the earth and the nature is outlasting us all. So it's just that they give this magical power to these entities to actually possess what is natural, which is unnatural, actually, to have a non-physical and non-concrete entity have any. If there's no more humans left on Earth, what government owns what on Earth? Earth is still there, it does not have any ownership. So it's like impossible to own anything, really. But they pretend to, and we pretend to in our turn afterwards to say we own this and own that. But as you say, it's really the states and the official structure that can take anything they want if they see it fit.
At the point of a gun, as Chris Kendall always points out, always at the point of a gun, which is just full force. That's their ultimate control is lethal force.
Oh yeah, they have it for sure.
So everyone go and research Agenda 2030. They're laying it out for you quite clearly on what you can and can't do and their vision for the future. And it's all right there. And I think, again, the Pope is going to probably explain it in some way. I don't think he's just coming to say hi. It's all there. And all the fear-mongering is all meant to just distract you from the blueprint that you are going to be given. And are being given every day, actually. But on a micro level, it's not always easy to notice. But the macro, it's the 100-year plan that should be most interesting because most people are worried about the future for their children and their children's children. And they can just see how significant their time here is on Earth to influence what's happening because they're never given a chance to address the big picture. They're only meant to work on their small picture, and they could see really how all of this adds up, how all of it will add up in bigger things. That's perhaps what all the magic is meant to distract from, maybe.
Yeah, I think they get their power from us in the sense that we are so many, so that gives them power to be able to completely control us, so they need us in that sense, and that's also why I put into question the fact that they pretend to want to limit the number of people on Earth. But the more people there is on Earth, the more power they have. So why would they stop?
Yeah. Well, they harness our energy. Yeah, they really do harness it. Yeah, I don't know the numbers. I think I just look around me. I can see that population's always declining as people get, quote unquote, more educated. And I truly believe that they, their social systems functioning, they need to bring in more people. Just the massive Ponzi scheme where paying out on one end, that means you need more people in on the other end. And if it's just a numbers thing, then you just need more people. Just bring in more people into your scheme, especially if it's a scheme that is still functioning. Now, a dysfunctional financial scheme will never work no matter how many people or how few people are in it, but as long as people are paying into it, I think really the Germany No Agenda show is mentioning Germany needs 500,000 more people. Their tax system from collapsing, you see. People stop paying into a system or believing in a system, then it can collapse.
Well, that would be a good thing, maybe. No, well, but I'm not sure if I believe the powers that be when they say we need more people for this and that. I think it's just a question of supply and demand, really. So it just means that bringing in that many more people would just lower the wages so much that they get better control over the general population. So I don't think it's good for them for people to be in a position where they're in too high demand, for instance. So it's also a good way to level the education the grade of or it's a way to level down the education level as well, in the sense that when they bring in new people, it's mostly people that don't have higher education, and which is the case in many of the countries that are actually like a little bit probably not dumping down, but at least they are reducing their impact. Because like Germany, they are so good in producing and everything, so they are getting rich fast. They are still paying all this debt away, and you wouldn't believe that they are, because they earn better in Germany than in most other European countries, because they are so skillful.
They have a system that seems to work. Who knows what the reasoning is, the history, just the type of people, the way they organize themselves. It's very efficient. They they're proud to work, they value work, where not every society values that same way.
Exactly, and as the people at in the power, they want to shape the general world image, you know. So they do have their hand in how things are going to be down the road, and that's probably why they need to keep Germany in their place and not become too important or too, you know, good at what they're doing. So they have a prominent position. So they just calm it down a bit.
Yeah. Is Germany on the UN Security Council? I never hear about UN much anymore. Do they have a vote on the Security Council as a nation? It just occurred to me. I wondered if they do.
In my opinion, they don't, because there are Nazis after all, so they can't. But I'm not sure if that had changed in the last years.
Because we don't hear much about the UN and the Security Council anymore. It's just not brought up, because all these wars are just set in motion so long ago that they never get reconfirmed, they never get new authorization. I remember for a time, 20 years ago, we always heard about the United Nations and Security Council and how the vote went, and they seem to be out of the power loop at the moment. At least I don't hear about
it. Yeah, I think maybe they are, communicating in other ways more efficiently today. So it's like they probably don't need that much technical political debate, and that the newer generation don't actually long for that kind of questioning. So it's they're probably exploring new ways of giving them the news of the day, so to speak. And that does not mostly imply all these political intrigues as much as before.
Well, if anyone wants to look that up, if Germany had any role or any role of the Security Council, or I just never remember their name coming up. I always hear about China and the U.S. and Russia, but I don't even think Canada's on the Security Council. But it was just a thought that occurred to me when I was thinking about the power structure and the way we're ruled.
Well, just a
Most
funny thing,
don't.
If everything they do is a little bit the opposite, so the Security Council is actually where they plan their wars then.
well, yeah, they're the ones that authorize force, even though it's more symbolic, they say.
Yeah, it's our insecurity they're planning, the overcoming disasters.
Yeah, we haven't had a good disaster lately, kind of due for one.
Yeah, it's I don't know who has done enough studies into seeing the time lapse between the really big events they create for us, but it seems like there are at least one or two each generation somehow. So
yeah, which reminds me, your original idea about the histogram. I think call it that, histogram.fakeologist.com. I haven't looked at it in a long time. I'm wondering if anyone has edited it for the last half a year or so. It was quite complete at one point.
Yeah,
quite, quite well done.
To try to update it a little bit with some of the new tidbits we have found. I mean, putting in things like Stonehenge. I think Stonehenge is very questionable now. Like, we can put questions around that event. It probably goes along with the dinosaur hoax and everything. So it's like that was probably a period where they did a lot more like historical hoaxes, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, if anyone wants to look at histogram.fakeologist.com, or it's linked on the right side of my blog, fakeologist.com, way down on the right side, scroll down, and feel free to edit it and add some of the new psyops. Some of them are pretty minor, they probably don't need to go in, but just a good way of looking at all the events graphically to see how many there are and how many patterns you can discover and how much they all have in common, really.
Yeah, you're right about the fact that the trends that I was trying to bring up, they are discernible in that spreadsheet somehow, because you can see that there are periods that will only be like bank robberies and, you know, burglaries, and that was like what was promoted, and then you get over to the serial killers and you go into the terrorists, you know, so now there's no more no more bank robbers and serial killers left. It's only terrorists, you know.
Funny. Well, no money in banks anymore. It's all digital. Nobody except the cash society, which I still believe is very big, worried about cash anymore. Yeah, serial killers just don't pop up anymore. It's the population so drugged up or docile, and or it's just not a trend in storytelling anymore. New stories are being written about digital creatures and creations.
Yeah, and as I also believe, like, money is kind of a psychological operation in itself. You will always see propaganda around money, so we will always have it in the movies, like people are, you know, killing each other for a bag of bills, you know. All that speak of money.
Yeah, I'm going to have to wrap the call up now. I've got an appointment, medical system. There's nothing to talk about, but...
It's a day after a very long audio chat on the anniversary of 9/11 yesterday, so happy to speak to you, Ab.
Yeah, nice to chat to you, and thanks for joining in yesterday. It's well worth a listen to anyone who wants to listen to the open house on 9/11. Called it Media Fakery Day, and anyone could have taken a look at. I thought that was a pretty cool cake. I've seen that cake before, but maybe not.
Not with a candle on the plane into the building.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
It was probably made by kerosene.
Yeah,
a kerosene candle.
I'd like to see the down and see how you did that. Yeah, it was nice chatting with you, and have a good day. And anyone else wants to come join the audio chat in the future, it's there.
Okay, speak to you, Ab. Have a good day.
Care, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Jeffrey, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.